You've got a friend. Who's your best friend? You know, you ask kids that question and it'll change just about every day that you ask them. I found that out from my daughter. Who's your best friend today? Sometimes it's me. That's always nice, but not usually. Usually it's her friends. We're going to talk a bit about friends today, and you might think that's a sort of a strange thing to talk about. What is life without friends? They add flavour and joy, and it's been said that life without friends is like living on a desert island. And you know what? I reckon if I was living on a desert island, I'd be pretty lonely. And that's why I wanted to talk a bit about it today, because loneliness is in fact one of our modern epidemics. And you may not realise this, but loneliness affects a lot of people in Australia. I don't know if anyone's been listening to the ABC this week. They've had a focus on mental health. And it's interesting, the report on loneliness they did in 2005 found that 1 in 5 men and women between the ages of 25 and 44 experience considerable loneliness, mainly because now in Australia they are living alone. Living alone causes loneliness. In Australia, men are more likely to be lonely than women, but probably less likely to tell you that they are. Men are more likely than women to agree with these phrases. People don't come to visit me as often as I'd like. I don't have anyone I can confide in. I have no one to lean on in times of trouble. Do you agree with some of these phrases? Maybe they sound familiar. Men are less likely than women to agree that I seem to have a lot of friends and there is someone who can always cheer me up when I'm down. You wouldn't think so, would you? You'd think that men would have lots of mates around them. But you know what? Feeling known and being known as a person, you can be surrounded by a lot of people and still be in the depths of loneliness. You can work at a busy office and still be alone. How many people do you have in your life that fulfills the role? Someone who can cheer you up, someone who can visit you. You know, they say it's a true friend that can stop by without having to call first, so you've got to clean up. How many friends do you have that can just stop by? The truth is that many people don't have many friends. Now, so what, you might say, that should just toughen up, just be stoic and get through it. But in fact, loneliness has a very big impact on health, a very big impact. They've done studies that show that if you're suffering from significant loneliness, you'll suffer from an increase in your blood pressure. Your level of stress and cortisol production will go up if you're experiencing loneliness. There will be a negative impact on your immune system. You'll be unable to sleep properly if you're lonely. There will be an increased level of depression and anxiety. And they've even shown there's an increased risk of developing Alzheimer's disease if you're lonely. In fact, they discovered that the difference between a lonely person and a non-lonely person in their health is equivalent between a smoker and a non-smoker. Now, you probably agree that's significant, right? Now, friends are necessary. I would suggest that they're very necessary. And I'm going to look a little bit at what the Bible says, and we're going to go to the wisest person in the Bible, and we're going to see what the book of Proverbs says about friends. Because, I don't know about you, but it's hard to find friends. When you're a kid, you seem to have a million friends, right? Everyone's your friend. You know, Eliana waves at people in the street. I'm like, oh, is that your friend? Oh, no, I don't know who they are, just some stranger. What? You know? We don't do that. She'll run into a playground and play with kids for hours. Who was that? Oh, they're my friends. She'd never met them before. She'll never see them again. But they're her friends, you know? But as you get older, boy, it's tough to do that, isn't it? You can't exactly go to the supermarket and make 20 friends while you're in there. Otherwise, they'll be calling store security on you and saying, yeah, there's someone creepy hanging around the produce, you know? It's hard. Where do you make friends? When you get older, especially, boy, where do you go? You could join a club, I guess. But, yeah, friends that are like family, they're very tough to find. People who care for you, but even though they're not obliged to, how do you find people like that? Friends are essential, and I think Well, I want to look at what Proverbs says about it today, and hopefully it'll help us at least identify in our lives who is a good friend and who isn't, because I think it's important to know that. Loneliness quite often leads to depression as well. So let's have a look. Proverbs 27:9 is our first one. Proverbs 27:9, perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of a friend springs from their heartfelt advice. So the Bible here is comparing the sweetness of perfume. Now, I don't know about you, if you've ever, like, if you've worn perfume, or if you've ever, if you're a man, you may have worn it, I'm not sure. Hopefully you wear deodorant. But if you've ever embraced someone who's wearing a cologne or a perfume, have you noticed that it lingers? I love that, because you can catch a scent of them hours later and be reminded of your friend. And the Bible's comparing that sweetness of a perfume with the sweetness of a friend's advice. That's what makes friends so pleasant, is that their advice is heartfelt and it's sweet and brings joy to the heart. Something friends do is give heartfelt advice, not bad advice, advice from the heart, which means they understand you, they know you. It means that they've literally felt in their heart what you are feeling. Heartfelt, that's what it means. They have empathy for you and have felt the problem that you have in your heart, and they feel it as their own problem. I used to joke and I'd say, a problem shared is a problem two people have, right? Don't share your problems. But that's not what the Bible says. If you've got a friend and they can give you some heartfelt advice, and that is sweet, sweet like perfume. There's nothing like it. Because I don't know if you've realized this, but sometimes we can't always see our own way out of our problems. Have you ever had that happen? Like some friend will come to you with a problem. Oh, this is happening and this is happening and this is happening. And you'll just say, well, do this and this and this. And you can see it really clearly, the path ahead for them. Have you ever experienced that? And yet when you come to your own problems and you can discombobulated and you're puzzled, and some friend can say, this is the way it should go. And it's heartfelt. They understand where you are and they give you a way forward. Some things like that happen in life quite often. We need friends. This is an interesting story. This is a man named, I'll call him Luz Long. Has anyone ever heard of him before? Good. He was a German long jumper. Actually, in the old days, before the war, they called it broad jumping. Did you know that? Kevin did. Broad jumping, they called it. I don't know why they changed it to long jumping. Maybe broad something is different. Maybe they used to, you know, they called women broads for a while. Maybe broad jumping took on a whole other meaning and they changed the words. But it used to be called broad jumping. He studied law at the University of Leipzig, and after graduating, pursued his interest in sport and became so good at it that by the summer of 1936, he held the European record in long jump and was selected to attend the 1936 Summer Olympics in Berlin. They were the first Olympic Games, this is interesting, to ever be televised. And so a lot of money was spent on them. And you know, when you're a professional sportsman these days, you get sponsored by Sanitarium, and they buy you everything, and they give you all your gear, and they send you to the Australian Institute of Sport in Canberra. And you know, if you've got talent, boy, you're up there, right? That's your job. You are a sportsman. That is all that you do. But it wasn't always that way. You know, even when I was a kid growing up, the footy players had to have a full-time job as well as play football. And that's what it was like. He was a lawyer who was also a sportsman. So he funded his own way for a lot of the time. It's different in those days. But 1936, Summer Olympics in Berlin was soon going to be infamous. You know why, right? Because the leader of Germany at the time, Reich Chancellor Adolf Hitler, saw the games as an opportunity to promote his government and his ideals of racial supremacy. And this guy was a poster boy for his ideals for racial supremacy. He wrote in the official papers that Jews should not be allowed to participate in the games. However, many nations threatened to boycott the Olympics. And so he relented and allowed all ethnicities to participate, which is how this man came to be there. He was the world record holder for long jump. And Lutz Long desperately wanted to match himself against Jesse Owens. Because let's face it, right? If you're an athlete, a professional athlete, you want to compete against the very best, don't you? If you hold the European record, you want to see if you can beat this guy and be the world record holder. And the Olympics was the only place to do that. So, he got to go to the Olympics. And he had a good reason to be optimistic. Lutz Long, during the qualifying round, set a new world record just in the qualifying round. While Jesse Owens struggled to even qualify. So to qualify, you had to jump 7 meters 15, which is a long way, right? They can do that. It's incredible, right? And Owens could normally do it, but at this Olympics, under the pressure, if you can imagine it, he failed in his first two attempts at qualifying. The world record holder couldn't even qualify, and he sat on the field dejected. And that's when Lutz Long went up to him and gave him some advice. He said to him, you've got to jump from a spot a couple of inches behind the step, because he kept on going over it. And he figured that since Owens routinely went a lot further than 7:15, if he just backed it off a couple of inches, he would still make enough to qualify. On his third qualifying jump, Owens was calm and cleared it easily and qualified for the finals. And it's probably bad luck for Lutz Long, because in the finals competition later that day, he beat Lutz Long, and both of them set new Olympic records, but Jesse Owens set a new world record that day. And he won the gold medal. And there they are, standing on the podium, Lutz Long doing the salute, Jesse Owens standing in the gold medal position. And he beat him, if you're wondering, by about 20 centimetres. Which is a long way in long jump. He got second place, though. Lutz Long was not unhappy. He got second place. And he was actually the first one to congratulate Owens, and they posed together for photos and walked arm in arm to the dressing room. Jesse Owens later said, "It took a lot of courage for him to befriend me in front of Hitler." Can you imagine the pressure on Lutz Long at that time from his government, from the whole country that he was standing in? Yeah, he didn't hold back, and he showed true friendship for Jesse Owens. And he gave him good advice, even though it didn't benefit him in any way. In fact, it made him a little worse off. If Jesse Owens hadn't qualified, he would have won. He would have got gold. But he still gave that advice. Jesse Owens said this, "You can melt down all the medals and cups I have, and they wouldn't be a plating on the 24-carat friendship that I felt for Lutz Long at that moment." Good friends give good advice. Long knew how to be a friend and wanted to be a friend to Owens. Despite where his country was heading ideologically, he braved the anger of his leaders because of his personal convictions. And sadly, Long went on to join the German army and ended up dying in World War II. And Jesse Owens later visited Berlin after it was all over and met with his son to share memories of what an amazing friend Lutz Long had been to him. Friends give good advice. If you want to know if you have a good friend, listen to the advice they give you. Is it sweet counsel? Does it come from the heart? Is it heartfelt? Does it come from a place where you know they have truly understood your heart's need? That's why a friend's advice is sweet. They understand you. You felt heard. You've made a connection with another human being. You're not only known, but are known by someone else. And they love you enough to help. That's the sign of a true friend. But also, I guess, while we're talking about are others a good friend, it's worth thinking, am I a good friend to others? Is my advice as sweet as perfume when I give it? That's a challenge for each of us, isn't it? Next verse, Proverbs 17:17. A friend... That's Proverbs 17:17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. A friend loves at all times. Someone who isn't just there for the easy parts of life, the fun parts, but also there for the tough parts. That's hard to find. Someone like that doesn't come along every day. But what's interesting is when you look at the second line, and a brother is born for a time of adversity, I used to think, does that mean that your family aren't going to have much to do with you unless you're in trouble? Because that seemed to fit what I was going through at the time. Family's only there for when you're in trouble. But some commentators say this verse actually means that when you go through adversity, your friend is born, as in changes, and becomes like a brother to you, becomes like family to you. A brother is born from your friend so that they become closer than a friend. They become family. And I understand that. You ever been through a time like that where you've got a friend who is a friend, just a normal friend, and you go through something difficult, and all of a sudden someone from somewhere, a friend group, steps up out of nowhere and just really goes above and beyond where a normal friend would and becomes like family to you. I don't know if you've experienced that. I have. A brother is born for a time of adversity. A friend is not just going to love you at all time, but also going to want to be as close to you as family. I say family, friends are the family we choose, right? You can't choose your family, but you can choose your friends. They're our second family, really, aren't they? David and Jonathan, I think, are a good example of this. Because you see, 2 Samuel, I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. This is after Jonathan has died in battle with his father Saul. David says, I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. Were they really brothers? No, they weren't born to the same father or mother. But David felt this way about Jonathan, that they were brothers. How good to have a friend like that, right? Isn't it amazing to have someone that is so close to you? They're like family. I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. You were very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful, more wonderful than that of women. He found a kind of friendship that he didn't get anywhere else than his romantic relationships. He had a friendship that became a brotherhood. Because Jonathan was there with David through the hard times and the easy times, wasn't he? Jonathan always supported him, even though it earned the wrath of his father Saul. Here's another one for you. Watch the time. Proverbs 11, verse 12 and 13. Whoever derides their neighbor has no sense, but the one who has understanding holds their tongue. A gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy person keeps a secret. A good friend is one who can hold their tongue. Again, this can be hard to find. A friend that you can tell something to and know that it is going with them to their grave before crossing their lips is like gold. Very hard to find and of great value. Keeping a secret, especially in this age of internet where privacy seems to be a forgotten concept, nothing is private anymore. You know, a few weeks ago, we changed prime ministers. Did you notice that? Happens quite often. I'm not sure if you did, you know. But we changed prime ministers. And look, whether you agree with his policies or not, seeing him come out of that party room on the Monday night, wiping tears away from his eyes, made me realize that we are watching a guy in a very intimate moment of his life. It's being shared with everyone. There's no privacy, right? Well, like, whether you liked him or not, he just got fired in front of the entire country. Can you imagine having a job and being brought in somewhere where there's a camera pointing at you and the entire country of Australia is watching and they tell you that you're fired and you've got to sit there and take it? Like, that's tough. That's tough. I feel bad for him on that level because everyone was sitting at home just watching him go through a very private moment out loud. And I know politicians do that. That's kind of what they do. I'm not saying that, but boy, this would be tough. Part of me shuddered to think about the kind of lack of privacy that he had at that time. Because that kind of stuff, there are certain things about us that we want to keep to ourselves. There are some things, though, that we need to share. There's some things you just need to talk about with someone because you need to get some outside perspective. But who do you choose to share something about yourself that others could potentially use? And it's very difficult, you know, when you choose someone to trust and that trust is then later betrayed. And I'm sure you've all been through something like that, when you think someone is your friend and then you hear them talking about you behind your back, or some gossip gets back to you, it hurts, right? Boy, you know, we gotta try and not be one of those people. And we all fall sometimes, don't we? We think we're sharing something for good reasons. And let me tell you, I get tempted by this a lot because people want to talk to the pastor. They want to tell everything to the pastor. And I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know if I want to hear this. They think it might be, it's not gossip if I'm telling the pastor. So they come to me and go, blah, and tell me all this stuff. Well, I don't want to know. It's too much, you know. I don't want that confidence. That wasn't mine to have. Someone gave that to you and not to give to me. So, yeah, I think we need to err on the side of caution on this sometimes. Because as well as Proverbs talking about the good qualities of a friend, it also mentions a couple of bad ones. And that's one of them, isn't it, being a gossip. Because, you know, if someone's talking to you and gossiping to you about someone else, I'm always thinking, what are you saying about me to them? What are you saying to other people, right? That's the problem with having a gossip for a friend. Yeah. So, I want to give you an example of this. When you choose something to share with people and then you realize you betrayed it, it can be very hard. Jan Paderewski, are there any Polish people here today? Good, then my butchering of his last name won't matter. He was a famous composer and a pianist, and he was actually the third prime minister of Poland, which is why I asked if any Polish people were here. Now, when he was a young man and playing piano, there's only so far you can go in Poland playing piano, so he decided to go to England to further his musical career. And he was a bit nervous about how he would do, so he asked a good friend in music, he asked his friend to write a recommendation letter for him. In case things went badly and he didn't get through his first audition, at least he had this letter to take to someone and say, look, this friend has recommended me, can I have another audition, can I go somewhere else? So he went over there, he took this letter, unsealed, kept it in his belongings, went over to England and absolutely succeeded beyond his wildest dreams. Did very well with his audition. Forgot about the letter. Years later, he found this letter and remembered what it was. And he opened it up and he thought, oh, I'm going to read some good words from my friend to, you know, remember those good days when I was playing piano. And he opened it up and read these words. He said, this will introduce Jan Paderewski, who plays the piano for which he demonstrates no conspicuous talent. This is what his friend had written in this letter. So imagine walking up to someone saying, here's my recommendation. And it says, yeah, this guy is not talented. Choosing to trust someone and having them gossip about you even in a letter, right? How devastating. It is devastating. How can you ever trust anyone again with your closest thoughts? And you know, that's how you get lonely. If you don't have anyone to share yourself with, you are lonely. If you have no one to confide in, you'll find you're lonely. A good friend knows how to keep a secret, but a bad friend gossips and betrays your confidence. What else does a bad friend do? Proverbs 19, 6 to 7. Proverbs 19, 6 to 7 says, many curry favor with a ruler, and everyone is the friend of one who gives gifts. The poor are shunned by all their relatives. How much more do their friends avoid them? Though the poor pursue them with pleading, they are nowhere to be found. Are these good friends here that we're seeing? No, no. Why do they want to be friends? Well, they want to be friends with someone who can give them gifts. Because they get something from you. That's why they want to be your friend. You give them something that no one else does. The poor, people who don't have anything, they get shunned by those friends. They've got nothing for me. Why should I bother doing anything? A bad friend is only with you for what you have. Have you ever had one of those friends who only seems to call you when they want something from you? Not just to see how you are or to spend time with you. They just want what you've got. And if they don't need anything from you, mysteriously, you never hear from them again. That might be best. It's not always that way, of course, but these are people that we would call fair-weather friends. physical gifts, financial help, you know, sometimes even an emotional help. People will come to you when they want to pour out all of their issues and take from you emotional positivity and support, and then they're gone. There's no give and take in the relationship, only giving on your part and taking on the other. As long as you're giving to them, they're going to be your friend. As soon as they don't need anything, or as soon as you cut them off, they're gone. What does that really tell you about their friendship in the first place, though? Yeah, it may not have been real. It may only have been based on a transaction. Again, this is heartbreaking when this happens. And maybe you can relate, maybe this has happened to you. But if you ever, you know, I've got friends that I don't talk to quite often, and you can catch up with them years later and you're still friends. But I've got other friends that if I didn't call them, we would never be friends. It just wouldn't happen. It's all one-sided. So after a while you think, can I find truer friends? What else do bad friends do? Proverbs 1, 10 to 12. My son, if sinful men entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, come along with us, let's lie in wait for innocent blood. Let's ambush some harmless soul. Let's swallow them alive like the grave and whole like those who go down to the pit. A bad friend will entice you. A bad friend will lead you down a path that sees innocent people being hurt, that sees you compromise your morals, and all because they simply want their company on the road to damnation. I think about some of the people I called friends back in my youth. They encouraged me to drink alcohol, but were nowhere to be found when I was sick the next morning after drinking too much. They encouraged me to smoke and take up cigarettes, so I developed an expensive, unhealthy habit, but they were nowhere to be found when I needed help quitting. Some friends are like that. You may know the friends that are like that. When you're young, it's hard to spot them, isn't it? When you get older and a bit wiser, you start realizing. Where are your friends leading you? Do you have friends that seem to say, just try it once, or it won't hurt you? If you hear any of those words, maybe you should realize they don't have your best interest in heart. A true friend should respect your boundaries and wishes. A real friend doesn't push you into something you don't want. Luckily, in Proverbs, there's a couple of verses about the best friend. Proverbs 18:24. One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin. Some warning there for us. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. That's good news, isn't it? We've got normal friends. We've got friends that can even be like family. But there is one friend who is even closer than a brother. Someone you can trust with your confidences. Can we guess who the friend is? Proverbs 22:11. One who loves a pure heart and who speaks with grace will have the king for a friend. The king here, who does that represent? Jesus. He is our king, isn't he? If you love a pure heart, if you speak with grace, then you're speaking with the tongue of Jesus. And he will be your friend. God is a friend to us, closer than a brother. And then I guess as I've been asking, am I a good friend to other people, I want to ask myself, am I a good friend to God? Do I badmouth him to others? Do I gossip about him? Am I a fair-weather friend to God? Do I only call him when I want something from him? Am I God's friend as well? I guess I'm going to cheat now because I'm going to step out of Proverbs into John 15. Because Jesus said a lot about it. John 15, verse 13, greater love has no one than this, than one lay down his life for his friends. This is the test of friendship. that you would be ready to lay down your life for them. Jesus said, "You are my friends. If you do what I command, I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father I have made known to you." Jesus Christ, the King of heaven, wants to call you his friend. Would you like that today? Oh, me too. I need a friend like that. That's what I need. Someone I can trust. Someone who's always going to give me good advice in his word. Someone who's going to always be with me no matter what I'm going through, the good times and the bad. Someone I can confide in who will keep my secrets. Someone who won't gossip about me. Someone who won't lead me down a bad path. Someone who won't entice me into sin. Someone who is not a fair weather friend, who will always be there for me. Jesus is that friend. What a privilege it is to have him as a friend, isn't it?